I'll take questions for a few minutes here. Anything that you were actually applying yourself to, how was that? Any questions about any of those things I said or what you were just doing? Hi, your name, please. Nodding on to something. I'll repeat the question, of course, thank you. Yes, so Michelle is like, when you quieten your mind enough, then you start nodding off to sleep. Anybody else nodding off? Michelle, look around. Hands up, everybody who's nodding off. So this is, first of all, to be expected at the beginning of any retreat. In the beginning of the period, what happens is we are tireder than we realize, for one thing. And so it's like Saturday morning, it's the end of the work week, and so we bring with us a kind of backlog of being tired, for one thing, but the other thing that goes together with it, we're not stimulated. And so there's nothing to keep us going, we're not going anywhere, we're closing our eyes, which is sort of the message to your brain that it's time to check out. And add those two things together, no stimulus, quiet, no activity, no distraction, nothing to do, tiredness, close your eyes, it's on. It's pretty normal. And so first, the first thing is that it's normal. Second, that it's not personal. It's just, you know, a lot of us, it's simply those factors happening. So you have to just hang in there and wait it out. You adjust, it's an adjusting. You can't just like switch into a whole different mode and be fully there for the new mode because of those two things that are just so major. And so don't worry about it. Wait it out, keep it patiently, persistently carrying on. What happens, though, in time is that we sort of change gear and we get more connected and the interest can grow. There's a couple of gross level tips. One of them is open your eyes, look out the window, like let light or energy or distance or space come. Another one is move your attention to something else, to something else, to something else, get a little busier with it. So like, am I frowning? Like, just be curious, check around, how's my tension here? Move my hands a little bit like that, adjust my posture, those kind of things. Another thing is right there where you're sitting, you can stand up. Just stand right there. In fact, I might suggest we do it later, but I might not. When you stand, just stand in a relaxed, comfy way with your feet apart. You can put your hands in your pockets or hang them by your side or whatever's comfy. And just be aware of the change and there's all blood running down your legs and your feet are adjusting. The activities that keep you standing that are going on all the time. It's kind of interesting, the kneecaps are moving and things like that. Those are useful. Some people say, tug on your earlobes. I've never done that. A lot of people do that. Raise your hands up. You can just sit, all these things you can do just sitting right there. Raise your hands up, and that'll kind of bring some energy. More subtly, you need to be more interested in anything, but you don't have enough energy, and so it's hard to do. So just wait it out. In more longer-term retreats, if it continues on, some people find sleepiness continues on, there's sometimes the reason is that you actually don't want to be here because there's pain here or there's sadness here or something. It's a protection mechanism, a coping, sort of spontaneous coping. But we won't even think about that at this stage because it's early in the retreat. Hi, your name?
Okay. I don't know if this is, I've meditated before, but not this one. So I was paying attention to my breath, and then I was paying attention to my heart. And then I was paying attention to the traffic, and then I was paying attention to my hands. So I was slipping all over the place. Is that mind busyness?
Well, it's busier than a tranquil mind, but it's present. Because those things were all happening and you weren't lost in your fabricated world, and that's what we're doing. So meditation is being present with whatever. And so it's great. In fact, it's better to do that, move around, than to do something and then you get bored of it, then you drift off and go off fantasizing and you're not present. So we're trying to grow this faculty of knowing, of being here knowingly. And we're using these various objects, we call them, or bases, if you like, a home base to rest your attention on. And so if you're moving around from one to the other, then the mind is moving, but it's also present. That's what we want. One of the skills of meditation is to stabilize it so it doesn't keep moving. But that's only one. Presence is way more supremely important than one. One is a particular, the form of concentration when you actually can get very, very still. That's also, and that's an important skill to learn for sure. But the first and the biggest all around that is to be present. You can't do that if you're not present. You want to start with being present. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a good question. Sean is asking, going to sleep, legs going to sleep, is it okay about moving position? So in Vipassana, I've often said this, when I started the teacher training with Jack Kornfield in 2001, one of the other teachers was there at Spirit Rock, and he said to me, "Welcome to the Unitarian Church of Buddhism." I thought, oh, that's great, that suits me. And so it's like, what, you have to make it work yourself. So of course, if you're sitting there and you're getting numb or you're uncomfortable and that's not working, then it's going to occupy your attention and worry you, and you can't just be with your hands. So don't do that. The first thing is, don't cross your legs. See my legs here? They're one beside the other. Mm-hmm. Sit them more like that. You have to get your knees a bit further out sometimes, but so that they're not one on top of the other. One on top of the other is guaranteed that sooner or later something's going to go to sleep. And so don't do that. Separate them in some way. But sometimes even then, things go to sleep. So it's totally okay to move your position once in a while to adjust so that you're at ease. Now, how I make this a meditation practice is, what we learn, and that's not what I was teaching as the first thing this morning, but nevertheless, what we're learning is how, is the A of the O of slow rain, is how to actually let numbness be part of your experience and be okay with it and make space for it and not have to fix everything, not have the little mind and the little executive assistant run in there and rearrange it all the time. And so we would meditatively be interested in what that sensation is like for a while. So you don't need your first thing you do is like avoid it. We're not trying to fix. But so on that level, meditation level, just being with whatever it may be. But on a practical level, it's just going to consume your attention too much, be uncomfortable, move it. And I would move it not first thing. I would be interested first. Where is it? What are you feeling? What's that like? Go back tingling. So that you apply, instead of fix it mode, you apply A, I, O, some interest, some allowing it. So I'm just applying your attention to be curious to the sensation as one other thing to notice, and then I would move it. So it's not wrong to move. The idea of sitting still, actually what happens in stilling the mind and stilling the body is it's a result of the mind becoming more serene. As the mind becomes more serene, because we've learned to keep letting go of all of the distractions and the entanglements that we get into, and it's able to stay more, and as it settles down more, the whole system relaxes. As the system relaxes, the body relaxes. As the body relaxes, it's more comfortable. You can sit for longer. It's not you impose the stillness on this frantic mind and then you get zillowing inside this tight straitjacket. That's not meditation. It's horrible. And so you let the body settle as it settles. So mind is still, not because I'm making it be still. It just is more comfortable. So it can be still for a long time if my mind is relaxed. So don't struggle in that way, and don't worry about what people think and what you're looking like, because that's completely nothing to do with freedom. That's all about ego and judgment and frustration and all that. So yeah, be comfy, be soft, find a place that's relatively ease and stable. And the fine-tuning of being able to maintain that just comes. Your name?
Yeah. But my focus, I was focusing on my breath and bringing myself back. I don't even know what my question is.
I'll just repeat what Judith has said, but she was talking about she's able to come back to her breath. That was her focus. She was with her breath. And then there would be there would be a thought, and then she could say, oh, so she was thinking something, then she'd be with her breath, and then an image came, and then she got all involved with the image and was forgetting the breath, and then she doesn't even know what was going on, and is that, and what's her question? Does this sound familiar? This is kind of in a territory. It's a sort of confused, it's a bit of this, a bit of that, where the mind is not doing what you're wanting it to do. It's doing a bit of this and adding that. Often it adds images. Often it'll add comment. Sometimes it'll sing them. I dare not say it because then people will be singing for the rest of the weekend. But, it just does this thing. It's a busy little EA, executive assistant. And it's doing all kinds of things. It's often just doing them out of playfulness. Sometimes it's motivated to try and make it better. That's, you know, usually what it's where it gets really busy. You're not in charge of your mind, are you? And we realize it's humbling. You know, we can't do a simple thing. I gave you a whole ton of instructions with great detail, which you usually don't give in retreats. And even then, with all those clues and aids and reasons and motivations, it doesn't do it. So yeah, that's right. The mind is not well trained, and so we're training it. And so you allow it, but it's also not wrong for it to have images. It's going to show up images. I have tons of images. I'm a very image-minded mind. And so there are those things too. What I'm interested in isn't what happens in there, is your motivation to be present. And in this particular retreat, I'm wanting us to be aware of the getting caught up, the getting entangled, the getting confused, or the wanting to do something or figure something out, is to see how we get caught and to see if we can relax that. That's the sort of theme of our weekend. That cat entanglement, it's because we're worried or because we're fascinated or because we are confused or whatever it may be, bothered by something. We get away from the simple task. It's so simple to just be with your breathing. But something's pulling us and engaging us and entangling us. And we're wanting to recognize that and relax that. Relinquish, renouncing. The name of this, the Pali word is nekhama, N-E-K-K-H-A-M-M-A. They're often double all the consonants in Pali, I have no idea why. Nekhama. And it means renunciation, but it doesn't mean like no chocolate. It means relinquishing the entanglement of what causes distress. Yeah. It's letting go of what we habitually occupy ourselves with, preoccupy ourselves with, get caught involved with in this executive assistant activity, to do this other activity, which is not do any of that, and just be here quietly. But we get pulled away from being here by this activity. So wanting to understand how that works, and as best we can, keep relaxing it, relaxing the grip that's pulling us away. And so you're just learning to understand and to see it. It takes a lot of seeing, a lot of understanding. So, but don't take it personally, and don't make it a problem. You're just learning to see what goes on in there. It's a bit of a mess. It's all kinds of things in there. So we're getting to know and understand how we're functioning, and then we get to see how useful that is, or useless that is, or costly that is, or effective it is. And we can't understand it until we can observe it. And we can't observe it until we can stabilize the observing. And then we start being able to see more and more and understand more and more. And it's through understanding that we become free. It's not anything else. But understanding is that we can't see what's going on, and we can't see what's going on without training ourselves to look steadily. Yeah. You're just reporting the typical mind. Mm-hmm. Welcome to humanity. Anyone else? Hi, your name?
Joanna.
Hi, Joanna. Welcome, especially your younger one here. I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit about experiencing emotions and strong emotions?
Yeah, emotions. What about that, experiencing emotions as we sit here? And not just as we sit here, but experiencing emotions. So I would say this, that we're vulnerable, we're sensitive, all of us are made that way. We're more vulnerable and tender than we like to make out. And life bombards us all the time with these, you know, arrows and darts and things and people. And we're not in control of that. It just happens. We're sort of, you know, life. And some of those things really trigger us. They really touch us and really affect us, and we have an emotional response. And we find that our states of mind are changing in color. Like sometimes the mind is gray, sometimes the mind is full of, you know, bright colors and passions and excitements and joys, and sometimes it's really gloomy, and then sometimes it's like profoundly sad or really upset. Some of those moods are kind of like vague, background, ongoing. Sometimes a thought will come and it's like we just got stabbed by something, and it's a huge welling up. The welling up emotional attacks, almost, they're like attacks, sort of waves According to a woman called Jill Bolte Taylor, who wrote My Stroke of Insight, did you read that book?
Yeah.
So she says that, well, she's a neuroanatomist, she says that it takes 90 seconds, that flood, that whole flood, whoa, so that's useful to remember. So it will have a wave, a flood of it, and then it will subside, maybe leaving a residue mood. And all the time there are different kinds that we're in. The thing about this that's important in meditation to recognize and to remember and to observe is that the mood, whether it's a passing dramatic one or whether it's a background one or a combination of both, is like the parent state, the state of mind. And that parent, mother really, I was a midwife for a long time, what that mother does is it keeps having babies. And so that state of mind keeps producing offspring, and the offspring of mind produces its thoughts. So you're having a flood of emotion or a state of emotional state, that mind will produce thoughts from that state. So if you have an anxious flood, you're going to be worrying, worrying, worrying. All the products of that are thoughts that worrying, which perpetuate. They're coming from that state, perpetuating that state. So think of mothers and babies. I do. And so don't believe the babies. Of course they're going to be babies, because the mother's worried, so it's going to produce babies that are worried, obviously. You know, if it's paranoid, you know, if there's, you're afraid of something, then you're going to be, oh my God, what if this, and what if this, what if this? That's what the mind does. It produces the offspring of the state it's in. So we want to recognize the state, but we don't want to believe it and get hooked into all those babies, because they're just going to keep the whole thing perpetuating. Papancha. Papancha is proliferating that whole thing. What we want to do is feel that feeling. But the thing is, our little executive assistant here who's trying to help us thinks that if it thinks a bunch of babies about that, it'll help somehow. At least explain it, or maybe figure it out, or maybe get rid of it, or if we worry enough, we'll figure something out and it'll stop. The feeling will then be averted. It's trying to protect us from feeling the feelings. It doesn't work, it just makes the feelings worse. That little assistant thinks it's so clever, but actually is. So we're learning a much better program than that little program of thinking about it, where we're feeling what it feels like. And that is hard to do because it's counterintuitive. Oh no, oh no, I don't want to feel afraid. I don't want to feel upset. I don't want to feel heartbroken. Oh no, I want to do anything but that. I want to think myself out of it. So we make it simple. Meditation is way simpler than the rest of it. And just feel the feeling. And if it's an intense one, it's going to flood through the system for 90 seconds, and then it's going to subside. And the busy thoughts are going to be spewing out while we're in that flood, and then it's going to subside, and then it'll go quieter, and it'll leave this residue of like, whatever, and how's that? And just be with that, just stay, and then it'll subside somewhat, and we'll recognize it. So I'm feeling this kind of feeling today. At least for this night, the next half hour, feeling like this. It's like this. This feels heavy, it's tight, it feels, you know, bubbly, whatever it is. It feels hot, it's anger, you know, it's got a lot of, it feels very churny. Makes my jaw do this. Come to the direct experience, not the story, not the maybes, not the babies, just the direct thing. Stay here with that parent and allow yourself to know it, and then. It's going to subside from being so dramatic when you then go back to your hands. You free your neck up or something else, or just listen to the traffic, something else, and you switch to something else. But when it's strong like that, overwhelming, you just have to make space for it. Here it is. But don't believe in all of the babies. Right? It's a skill, we learn it. But it's counterintuitive, and it's not the way we've always done it. It's radically different. We don't want to do that normally. We don't think that's useful. We're scared of doing it that way. Oh no, it's going to be overwhelming. But it is actually the way to get through it. Good luck. Yes, it's you get a bite of it on TED Talks called My Stroke of Insight. It's this incredible story of a woman who happens to know that she's having a stroke, because she's a neuroanatomist, brain anatomist, while she's in the midst of a stroke. And her stroke impairs only her left hemisphere, rational thinking, and doesn't impair her intuitive, understanding, receptive right hemisphere at all. And she, I mean, later when she can get her writing skills back, 10 years later, she writes about it. It's fantastic. She talks about nirvana and freedom, all about Buddhism, but she's not a Buddhist, she's a scientist. But she understands that the damaged left hemisphere is where we get so caught up. And that she's completely free because she's only in the right hemisphere, where she's totally present and totally aware, and totally knowing everything that's happening with no thinking going on. It's actually really very good for meditators to read that book. Okay. Enough talk. Now, and enough sitting still, so if you want to move now. So we're going to do some walking meditation. It's just gone 10:30. So this is now, I give you four areas to be interested in: breathing, hands, hearing, and what was the other one? Body?
Whole body.
Whole body. So now here's a fifth one, which is just sort of part of the last fourth one, really. Body while it's moving is that fourth area. Body while it's walking. And so we're going to go do some walking and being present while we're walking. So it's awareness while walking. It's not another thing. You're just continuing the same, being here, relinquishing all the stories and all the comments and all the other things you're doing, and stay present. And your home base is your body as you walk. It could also be your breathing, it could also be hearing. The same way you were including it this time is fine, but it's easy to use the body for a lot of people. Some people, you don't feel your body, but a lot of people are very access the body. So remember to be interested in your body. Be interested in it. It's an amazing thing, this body, as it swings and sways and steps and leans, and you've got some hills here. So my recommendation is that you go walking at an average walking pace. You don't have to look too weird in the town, and don't keep your heads way down, and don't pad very slowly up and down 10 feet. That just definitely looks really weird. And it's not necessary. I want you to go for a walk. You could say, I would say, for instance, I'm imagining walking for a couple of blocks, and then down half a block back through the alley, a couple of blocks down another half a block along the street. Like, do some wandering around here for a reasonable distance, and then turn around. So if you do a circuit like that, you're not going anywhere, you're just going walking. You can go a couple of blocks down and turn left and go along beside the, I don't know what it's called, but there's a nice walkway that goes along by the land, but by the docks and the sea. It's to be present while in your body. So you need to choose a rhythm, a gait, a speed of walking, and the, whatever you decide to be moving consciously, that engages your attention, so that you're staying here in this present moment with your experience walking. Sometimes you'll be seeing different things, so know that you're seeing, but stay within your body as you're seeing, if you possibly can, rather than get pulled out to the thing, and then it's going to stimulate you're having a lot of conversation and you don't even realize you're doing it. So stay embodied as best you can. Enjoy it. You can walk funny walks, you know, the Monty Python, you can do weird John, please, but you know, you can exaggerate the swinging or walk backwards or go up and down on your toes sometimes, or play with your body as you're walking in a way that is engaging and interesting to help you stay present. Help you stay here in this moment rather than the other. You can change the speed sometimes, you can go jogging if you want to go for a jog, but stay embodied. We'll take about 40 minutes. We'll aim to be back here sitting just after 11:15, and you've got to take responsibility for that. So it's about a 40-minute period, 40, 45 minutes. Then we'll sit here together, I won't say very much, I promise, until about noon, and that's when we'll take a lunch break, 1:15, so that you know what we're doing. Okay? Any questions about that, ask me individually. Otherwise, please go out there. It's lovely out there.